Welcome back, campers.
That was your host, Caitlin.
And that was your host, Genevieve.
And you have arrived at a very special episode of Camping is Canceled.
They're all special, Jen.
They are. I think I say this every episode. <Do you>? Like every episode is the first episode. Also, before we dive in really quickly, I want to mention about Michelle Trachtenberg. I am so sorry to hear of her passing. That was really, really sad. She was only 39. Mm-hmm.
And we actually just did the camp bulletin and
yeah,
we didn't mention that. But I do know, I saw today, her parents declined an autopsy.
Mm.
And I know they are Jewish. And so an autopsy would be against their religion, sacrilegious. But I know she had a liver transplant and whatnot. And people in the comments were saying that truly takes a toll on you.
Oh, absolutely.
And to not do the autopsy is respect for her and her privacy.
Yeah, and I do think it's pretty well known, reading between the lines, that she did have struggles with addiction leading up to the liver transplant. And a lot of people were being very, very cruel about that. But to that I say, fuck off. And you don't know what was going on in her life. I loved her. She was a huge part of my childhood, and I was obsessed with Gossip Girl and Ice Princess.
Okay, Ice Princess.
Loved Ice Princess. I wasn't allowed to watch Euro Trip. But you know what? Maybe I'll rewatch that now for her. Yes, yes. So she was a beautiful soul, and everybody who knew her only had good things to say about her. I was reading through some of the tributes to her online, and yeah, it hits you different when somebody that you grew up watching and feeling like
somebody so young,
yeah, and somebody that you kind of emulate yourself after. Like, I always tried to do my hair like her,
yes,
or find clothes that looked like the clothes she wore in Ice Princess. And yeah, she touched a lot of people's lives, and so I really hope that she's resting in peace and her family is able to find peace.
And people, this is why the internet sucks, major dick.
Yeah.
Read the room. Somebody's dead.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand the hate.
Yeah.
She didn't do anything.
No.
I don't know.
No.
This isn't Hitler, guys.
No, certainly not. So yeah, with that out of the way, you have arrived at a very special episode of Camping is Canceled. And as part of the exciting things we've got happening over on Patreon, we wanted to drop in your regular feed another taste of what you have exclusive access to as one of our day campers for $3 a month. In addition to Kate and I's weekly camp bulletin, which was it this past? No, week before last, we released a camp bulletin sneak peek. We've decided to get a little more survival stories in the mix. So once every month, we're going to be taking you guys through one random episode of the TV docuseries called I Shouldn't Be Alive. In case you've never heard of it, it's similar to the show I Survived, but instead of more crime-focused stories, I think pretty much every episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive tells a story of survival from an extreme life-threatening situation in a remote or dangerous natural environment. So think like caught in an avalanche, or you're lost in the woods and hunted by wolves for days on end. The Gray.
The reason why camping is canceled.
Exactly. And we love this particular show because it combines real life interviews from the actual survivors with one of the best parts of television, if you're a millennial, early 2000s-tastic actor reenactments, which we know are supposed to make the story come alive. But if you're Kate and I, they mostly give us some much needed comic relief.
I mean, this one that we're going to do, I truly, in some of the scenes, I was like,
y'all,
is this like an early 2000s gay porno intro?
I didn't know if I should be crying or laughing. At times I was doing both, and it will all make sense as we get into it. But the actual survivors of these stories and what they go through are no joke. And for our first episode, we picked a story that said it was about teenage Boy Scouts on a backpacking trip, since we thought, what better way to kick off a new segment of Camping is Canceled? So we started watching the episode separately, and at first, Caitlin and I were texting each other back and forth about how we couldn't believe, y'all, one of the actors of the Boy Scouts. So I think it was 2002 when this was released. And one of the actors is baby Aaron Taylor Johnson.
I was like, hold up.
And they do the little thumbnails along side if you're watching it on Amazon Prime. So Aaron Taylor Johnson's face popped up and I was like, which one of these little 14-year-olds is Aaron Taylor Johnson? And
he was genuinely his kick-ass character, this little nerdy boy.
Yes.
So cute.
It was a fantastic Easter egg. But that aside, the actual story quickly turned to us being like, what the actual fuck? And Caitlin, I know you must have been, I know I was staring in horror at the terrifying story we were hearing. So, without further ado, this is our coverage of I Shouldn't Be Alive, Season 2, Episode 7, A Walk Through Hell. Lights out, campers.
Oh man, the mountains call my number one. I'm just a life-size lottery ticket in the hand of the one.
Okay. So we need to get a few things out of the way. Opinionated things to set the scene.
Yes.
This story takes place in the Grand Canyon, and I know everybody talks about it being beautiful and wow, and you have to visit it and it'll change your life and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Calendars about it and
I think one of the first messages I sent you when watching this, Jen, was the Grand Canyon is the ugliest fucking place on earth.
People are going to leave us a one-star reviews. Listen, I have to agree with you because it's nothing but dusty rocks.
It's hideous.
It's cool in the sense of the scale of it, like something so massive and it looks different. I don't know, but it just doesn't make me feel that feeling of like, wow.
The way I love outdoors. Like, I take outdoors, mountains, over cities any day. Like, I love mountains.
Spectacular and ocean.
But y'all, I've seen so many videos of people, like, there's like a prompt of, where's the face of like the USA? Like, make a, like, what, everybody's like, oh, Florida is the dick, obviously. And then obviously the Grand Canyon is the ass crack.
Obviously.
Every time.
Obviously.
And I've
look, I even made a note about here. I said dusty ass crack.
And it is. So I just like, and there are trails that I have saved on Pinterest travel. Like, I would love to hike a certain trail. But I genuinely just don't understand how people are like, yep, this is where I want to go. I want to stare at Red Rock.
I think it's that maybe you feel the same way because of the different things we talk about that we love, but I don't think either of us really fuck with desert landscape. I want mountains, I want rivers, I want bears and wolves and rolling grassy hills and like desert for me is heat, dry, cactus, snakes. Caitlin and I aren't really into it, but we don't want to yuck people's yum. If you're if you're into it, and clearly millions of people are because they hike it every year, then that's great.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So the Grand Canyon National Park is home to no less than 6 species of the deadliest and most aggressive snakes in North America. The rattlesnake.
Oh, yay. No, thank you.
And at any time, there are thousands of rattlers slithering around the Grand Canyon, along with highly venomous scorpions. You lost me at tarantulas. I could do the snake and I can do the scorpions. Tarantulas are a fuck no. Yes, we know a sting from a scorpion or a tarantula won't actually kill an adult. But guys, it'll still hurt like a motherfucker and ruin the experience.
Yeah, you don't want to get stung by one of those. And I guess if you were allergic, it could kill you because people die from bee stings if they're allergic. Yeah. So yeah, don't want to assume. It's best to just not be stung or bitten by one of those.
And then the mountain lion.
Yeah.
I know there's an episode specifically of a mountain lion survival story.
Oh no, terrifying. Oh,
I just hope it takes me quickly.
There you go. It probably will because it's a lethal death machine on four paws.
But besides the deadly living creatures, we have the steep slopes covered in large loose rocks and the sheer cliff drop-offs that make for very treacherous hiking terrain in many places. And if you're curious, 12 people, on average, die in the Grand Canyon every year from falling, drowning, starving, dehydration, and our personal favorite, sightseeing helicopter crashes. What the fuck?
That's terrible.
No. And I know somewhere in the national park, they have one of those, you get like hooked up.
And, oh, yeah.
Like dragged to the top of an arch or whatever. Yeah. And then it like swings you down.
Oh, yeah. Across the
ridge. And I'm like, no.
No, thank you.
I'm very grateful my brain does not require such activities to give me dopamine.
Yeah.
But none of that can keep it from being one of the most popular national parks in America that millions, like Jen said, of people hike every single year. I can already feel our family members, one who's sitting downstairs and will make a guest appearance soon.
Yes, he will.
Who love outdoorsy stuff, eye rolling into the next dimension. So we will say that despite everything we just said, dying in the Grand Canyon is very rare, and as long as you are following park rules and not being a dumbass, you should be fine.
Yeah.
And can stare at all the piles of dusty rocks to your heart's content.
Yes.
And remember not to stack rocks.
Why can't you stack rocks?
Park rangers are against it.
Oh.
Because, I mean, like, people do it, I know, to...
Because you're, like, disrupting the natural landscape?
Well, I think there truly is a lot of controversy around rock stackings.
Really?
I have stumbled into so many...
Interesting.
...posts and comments about it.
Maybe we'll have to do a bulletin about rock stacking.
Well, then I think of us going on our kayaking trips, and we definitely stack rocks.
Oh, whoops.
Anywho, and with all that jargon that we just spouted off, that is the perfect segue to introduce the stars of our story. 5 teenage Boy Scouts from Utah and their 3 adult Scout leaders, for whom the official motto of the Boy Scouts of America is, be prepared.
Isn't short, it simple. Ironic?
Yes. It gets ironic. And we first meet them, or rather their reenactors, at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning in June of 1996. The group had decided to embark on a 7-day backpacking trip in the Grand Canyon National Park from the top to the bottom. Right away, we learn that 3 of the boys are really close friends, 15-year-old Mark Coons, Jordan Weinger, and David Phillips, who had the most hiking experience of the 3 friends. They were all Boy Scouts, but Mark was really, really into it, and he was an Eagle Scout, which is the highest rank you can have.
Yeah. So I had to look up exactly what the Boy Scouts do, because we all know what they look like. The khaki and neckties, which they were not dressed like this when they were out there.
They're little vultures who sucker me into spending $40 on nasty popcorn.
That's right.
Because yeah. They send the cute little boy, like, aww, can you please buy some popcorn?
Yeah, and you feel bad saying no.
Gosh, dang it.
If only they could sell cookies, that would be great. Then we could get the cookies all year round.
That's true.
But junk food aside, the Boy Scouts is basically an organization that helps youth develop academic skills, self-confidence, ethics, leadership skills, and citizenship skills that they hope influence them into adulthood. And they do this in a variety of ways, like community service projects and group camping trips, ding, 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 where they learn wilderness and survival skills and first aid. So, you know, handy stuff to know if you're going to take on a backpacking trip.
Then we learn that Jordan and Mark went to the same high school in Bountiful, Utah, and all 3 boys had grown up together in the same neighborhood. So they were really close and super excited to be taking this hike together. I mean, they're 15.
Mm-hmm.
They're out of the house. They're out in the wild.
It's an adventure. I would be really excited about doing something like that. And I was, when I was right around their age, I got to do a week-long kayaking and backpacking trip in the upstate of South Carolina with one of my best friends. And it was a blast because it was like water, and then we'd kind of pull off and Ooh. Camp a little ways into the woods. So you were just in your swimsuit the whole time, and the weather was great, and we were jumping off of like 20-foot rocks into Ugh. The water and kayaking.
Chef's kiss.
Roasting hot dogs. Like, it was all the things you want in one of those trips, and that was a great memory. A lot of it, too, was probably because I was 15 and super exactly. resilient.
I mean, I remember just spending the night at my friend's house yeah. in the next town over, and we'd float in pool rafts down the creek.
When you're 15, you can sleep with a root in your back and exactly. be fine the next morning.
Now, but yeah. no.
But I totally see the draw at this age. And they were going to have a great time.
For the boys in this group, it would be the first time they hiked all the way down to the bottom of the canyon, but they did have a plan that the adult in charge of navigation had mapped out, and his name was Lauren Pace. So Lauren had also brought his brother Earl along, and the episode is a little unclear on the exact ages of the three grown-ups, but from what we could gather and find from their ages, they ranged from late 40s to early 70s.
So pretty wide.
So not the age that I would personally want to go 6 days, 7 days camping.
Yeah, on a hard hike, but to each his own.
Yep. And so Lauren's plan is to have the group follow what used to be a remote stock trail for about 3 days, descending 4,000 feet down the side of the canyon that follows the Little Nankoweep Creek bed. Now, this route is unmarked and it goes through a very rough wilderness area, and we are in 1996. There's no GPS and no cell service, even if they had one, so they'd only be following a map. You could have a satellite radio, but just like true crime cases, the security camera doesn't work.
Yeah.
They didn't have one.
Yeah.
Once they reached the bottom of their route, they would hit the Colorado River. Then they'd rest for a while, refill their water, then would take an easier route back up the canyon. In total, it would take them about 7 days. And they knew it was going to be hot because it's the dead of the summer, so they packed what they believed was plenty of water to get them down to the river. Now, the particular route they were taking down was recommended only for very experienced Grand Canyon hikers with excellent survival skills, but their leader, Guy Davis, had got their hike approved by the bountiful Utah North Canyon Stake and the Great Salt Lake Council of the Boy Scouts of America. Lawsuit.
Well, yes, maybe we'll get more into that later, but it does show you that they were not just like, oh, hey, this sounds like a good idea. Let's just go out there with no preparation. They thought that they were doing their due diligence and Gosh. Were prepared and trying to follow the Boy Scout motto.
Yeah, I get. Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. But to do an experience hike and then
yeah,
they allow that.
And we actually learn that Lauren Pace. Mm-hmm. It seems that he had done this before, this same route. So, yeah, that's a little unclear, but that's the gist I get from the episode.
Guy and the two other men were very experienced hikers, and Guy knew the boys in the group really well and must have felt confident it wasn't nothing they couldn't handle.
Right.
I mean, yeah. That is true. They, mm-hmm. It is your group. You know them. You know.
Yeah, exactly. So for the first few hours, the hike went great. The boys were having the time of their lives, and the leaders were enjoying seeing how much they loved it. After a while, they all reached the north rim of the Grand Canyon, which is where you get to see that spectacular panoramic view of Mother Earth's dusty ass crack. But the boys loved it. I mean, they were just like ecstatic, and it made them all the more energized for the massive undertaking that they had ahead. So another hour or so of easy hiking went by, and then they encountered a sign that was letting them know they were officially leaving the marked trail behind. So now they're just going by what Lauren Pace's map is telling them. There's no markers or cones or anything like that on the trail. And at this point, it became very apparent that this was not going to be like the easy hiking they'd done before. And this is when the episode lets us know, and you know that bad things are coming, that every year around 300 hikers run into serious trouble in the Grand Canyon, like so serious that around 200 of them have to be airlifted out. And like we said before, anywhere from 10 to 12 people actually die. And when you choose to go off trail in an area that is so rugged in such unpredictable, harsh conditions, the risk of dire situations skyrockets, obviously. So this is also when we learn that the first leg of their hike in the uncharted area was what's called the chute. And the chute is this incredibly rocky gully over a mile long, and it covers boulders, loose rock, and gravel. So as they start making their way down, the thought crossed Jordan's mind that, like, oh shit, they didn't have a radio or any way to contact anyone. So if anyone got injured, they were on their own. And from here on out, it was pretty slow going for the entire group, because every step they're having to be super careful to place their feet on a surface that's not going to shoot out from under them. And many places were so steep that they were having to take their backpacks off and hand them down to the person who was a little lower. And in no time, I believe it was Guy in an interview, he says, "We couldn't even call it a hike. Like at this part, it was just a climb. We were just straight climbing downhill." And they were also hitting patches of loose shale, which is basically just shards of like slippery and sharp flat rock that's broken off from other bigger rocks. And if you hit a patch of shale, you can just, it's like an avalanche, like you just start shooting downhill, and the weight of your pack, if you're wearing a heavy backpack, is gonna make you gain speed even faster. So not something you want to encounter. Now, this stretch of the chute covered a full 1,000 feet. So if you started sliding and you couldn't catch your footing, you could encounter really bad injury. I guess it could kill you if you fell the right way too. That's really bad. So as we're learning all of this in the episode, being like, the dangers of shale, we see, it's like a the British narrator making everything horrible sound really, really nice, because they have that nice British accent, but
I beg to differ.
Oh, right, Caitlin's not into the British accents. So if you're Caitlin, a very sinister British accent. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, their scout leader, Guy, loses his footing, and the weight of his pack sent him sliding and tumbling down the side of the chute. And he scrambled to slow himself down, but the boys, everyone's horrified, because all of a sudden, they go from fine to just he's tumbling down the side of this fucking canyon. And he just kept gaining speed until he's actually on his stomach, clawing at the side of the chute to slow himself down as he slid. And y'all, fortunately, he does come to a stop, but not in a way that we would wish on anyone besides Chris Watts. I'm already hurting and I don't even have these parts, but basically what happens is this man comes to a very abrupt stop because a log pointed straight up makes connection directly between his legs. And they show it in the episode with a stunt double.
They do. They're like, we're going to reenact this part.
Who wants to do it?
Okay. Butt cheeks are lined, yes. And it truly is the log up his ass.
Yeah. I really hope that they lined that person's parts with Kevlar, because it looks painful even in the reenactment. And Guy himself said that he, quote, managed to catch the log with a part of the body you should never hit a log with. And I mean, he was going down fast and he's in shape, but like he's a large man. So it literally takes his breath away and like incapacitates him. So the boys helped him to stand, and they took turns carrying his backpack for him for a while. And while this was obviously like terribly painful and scary, it could have been a lot worse. And Guy felt like he could keep going. So, I mean, I guess he's none the worse for wear. It had balls of fucking steel.
I would have peaced out so quick.
That would have been the end for me as well. And after this, it took the group around 2 hours, but eventually they made it all the way to the bottom of the chute without any more mishaps. This also meant that they could not go back the way that they'd come because it was just too steep. Now, as they'd been descending the chute, the temperature had been steadily climbing, and they'd expected it to be in the low 90s, which is, I mean, very hot, but that's normal for that time of year. But as the hours ticked by, it became apparent that a freak heat wave was hitting the canyon. So the sun is just relentlessly beating down. There was no shade, and the temperature continued to climb and climb until it reached a whopping 112 degrees Fahrenheit. And with the heat just radiating off of the rocks, it felt like they were being baked alive. And water, obviously, because there's no shade, was their only relief. So they were just absolutely guzzling it. And then they realized that they were only one day into their 3-day journey to the river, and they'd already blown through 75% of their entire water supply. So if this wasn't rough enough, they still had 2,000 feet to descend before they hit the river. And I know that that's less than half a mile, but we're not talking about like you're on a jogging trail.
Or it's, like a straight shot.
Yeah, it's probably like quadruple that because you're winding mm-hmm. and you have to go over stuff and around
and
stuff.
You're physically exerting yourself.
Exactly, cool. Exactly. And now for context, in general, because I needed to make sure I fact check myself on this. So the rule of thumb when you're on a backpacking trip like this is to have enough water for 1 gallon of water per day per person. And that gallon allots for your drinking, your cooking, if you got to do a little horse bath, etc. Like it's just kind of is like in general, 1 gallon per person per day, if you're not going to be by a natural water source with a filter. And that's in mild weather. So either this group severely underpacked water, or which is possible, it was just so hot that they actually blew through it that fast. And we hope, since they were supposedly like advanced Boy Scouts and with experienced leaders, it was the latter. I could see where it would be the latter, because just think about how much teenage boys will eat when you give them the opportunity. Their bodies are already working super hard. They're going to be drinking so much water already, even more on top of it, because you're just pouring sweat without stopping, no relief, and you're working hard. And so they're in serious trouble. And the episode does this great job at this moment in kind of doing a slow zoom out from the reenactors with a drone, and you see just how far they are from where they're trying to go, how desolate the area is, and how little they've come, like proportionately to where they still have to go. And you're like, oh shit, this is intense. And you realize that they've taken on something that most people, like even seasoned backpackers, will plan out their hikes. And I know this from talking to our family members who are seasoned backpackers. You plan it close to a natural water supply, like one that you're kind of always like along, so you can just step off, do your water pump filter thing, and you're good to go. You're not ever going for like days on end without being close to water. And it's very dangerous to do that, especially in a desert terrain in this time of year. So things are bad and they're one day in.
So by now, the cheerful mood everyone had started the day with was long gone, like most of their water.
Yeah.
No one was having fun anymore. The sun was absolutely cooking them, and there was zero shade, so everyone was just concentrating on covering as much ground as they could before they would have to stop for the night. Someone was having a grand old time, though, and that was the giant scorpion who found its way onto the top of David's backpack.
Oh, God.
He scored himself a free ride super close to the back of his neck for who knows how long before one of the other boys fortunately noticed it and instructed David not to move while they gingerly brushed it off with a stick.
I have to interject with a real life story here. Not that long ago, Caitlin popped by my place of residence, and she was sitting on the couch. We were talking about some dumb shit as we do. And all of a sudden, I go, Caitlin, don't move, which is, I know, the worst thing you could say to somebody, but I sincerely didn't want her to move because y'all, she had a wolf spider, like literally the size of almost a silver dollar, like its leg span, that had come from the depths of hell up the back of the sofa.
No.
And was just sitting on her shoulder. And I with my bare hand slapped the shit out of Caitlin. And I think I killed it. I don't remember. I know we made sure that it did not just slink back into a corner. We made sure it was actually like dead. And I'm sorry.
Typically I save spiders.
Yes, same.
But when they're on my body, it's different.
Once they violated your body, then it's fair game.
And
so,
I think once you hit it, I was like, that was hot. Like, Jen truly took care of me. She's like, don't move. And then I was immediately like, I don't even think Jacob would have done that for me.
So when I said that to Caitlin, she didn't move, and I did hit her. One time I did that to my sister when there was a wasp in the car. She was driving the car. It was reversing out of our driveway, and she literally just opened the door and threw herself out of the car while it was reversing.
I understand that. Yeah. I understand that.
So, Mary.
And I mean, thankfully, David did stand still, you know?
Yes. But... No, but you are in their natural habitat. So it's like, and you're just like, oh, I'm going to get a nice little ride. Get me some sun.
Ooh. And the narrator did say one sting could immobilize David.
Okay. One sting could immobilize David. That's how he says it, which is not true, but it's for dramatic effect.
Had David had some sort of severe allergy, no one knows. It might have been worse, especially since his body was under a lot of stress.
Yeah, that's fair.
But thankfully, he was not stung.
Yeah.
They just got a free show.
And then that poor scorpion would just found itself flying.
Mama, I can fly. And so again, like the log incident, it wasn't an actual disaster, but it definitely was a freaky reminder of how quickly things could go bad. So then they were all even more on high alert for scorpions and rattlesnakes. Around 7 p.m., they finally stopped to make camp for the night, and they had made it just far enough that they actually got their first look at the river. And David, being the always optimistic one, tried to get the other boys' morales back up by being like, look, guys, there's the river. We're so close. This is when the camera does the zoom thing again where it shows like the river and then it goes and it's like, oh, no. Fuck.
It's like us looking at the moon and being like, it's so close.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. But Mark said all he could think about was how not close it actually was and how little water they had left. The next day, even if they managed to keep a quick pace, they were still a full hard day's hike away in the same blazing heat with less than 1/4 of their water left. In fact, every drop of water had become so precious that when Jordan started to heat up some of it in the camp stove to cook ramen, David was like, bro, don't do that.
Like, sit the fuck down. Jordan's like, I'm already sitting down.
Like, it's actually pretty good just raw. Like... You're wasting it. And so for dinner, they all just ate their hunks of ramen noodles raw.
Oh.
We've all been there.
You've eaten ramen raw? Ew. Sam's
love
done
the
that
crunch
too.
Of noodles, though.
See, no, I like to slurp them and have the broth.
I like to crunch.
Our first merch. I like to slurp.
I like
Jen,
to crunch.
I like to crunch. These are like, what in the hell? But no, these guys crunched because if they got it hot enough to slurp, that would mean they were vaporizing it. And they were like, we're joking around, but it shows you how serious things were that they were that concerned about water that they're like, no, we cannot boil water because we need it.
First night.
Yeah. Scary.
And thankfully they had food that did not need water. Like it didn't need to be cooked.
Yeah.
And in his interview, Mark recalled that was the first night when he was really starting to feel anxious because he felt like something that was supposed to be this fun adventure was already right on the edge of being completely out of their control and dangerous. Another full day as hot as the one they just spent without water would mean their bodies would shut down very rapidly.
So the next morning, the group was up early so they could try and cover as much ground as possible before that blazing heat took over again. But by as early as 8 a.m., the temperature was already just as hot as the day before. They took small sips of their water to try and conserve it, but it was nowhere near enough to replenish the 8 cups of sweat they were losing every hour. Oh my God, That's so much. That's terrible. It was also taking them far longer now to cover ground because they were so fatigued because of the heat. And like, even when the terrain was easier, they were moving much slower. But just before noon, at the hottest part of the day, the group came upon this incredibly steep, rocky chute, like another one of those shale-covered, treacherous chutes, and it was agonizingly slow. By the time they got through this, the only person who had any water left was David, and he insisted on sharing it with his friends. The river was still a full, hard day of hiking ahead, so while the group pressed on, the effects of the dehydration began to debilitate the adults first, and for a while, Guy had actually been steadily falling behind, but still kind of was like, you know, they could see him, but now he just collapsed. And when he collapsed, he says in his interview that he was laying there just desperately trying to take those deep breaths you want to take mm-hmm. when you're working really hard, but all he could manage was these like little shallow gasps, and that was just terrible. And everyone was so focused on battling their own discomfort that they didn't even notice Guy had collapsed until they were hundreds of feet further down the chute. And at this point, they're like, Guy, like, are you okay? They really couldn't go back up mm-hmm. to help him because it was so steep. And he called down that he needed to take a break. And Lauren then told the boys, well, then they should all just stop and sit for a while they waited for Guy to catch up. But Jordan was like, no way. If they stopped, all they'd be doing was getting more dehydrated themselves without getting closer to water. They had to keep moving if they wanted to survive. This is what's scary to me at this point, Caitlin, is that they've gone from like, oh, this is great. Within a day, they're like, we have to keep moving if we want to survive.
Yeah.
What the fuck? So yeah, can't even imagine. So terrifying. And I know we've already started talking about dehydration and blah, blah, blah. And really fast, just so we can feel like we're smart, let's give ourselves a reminder of what actually occurs like in our bodies when they start suffering from dehydration, because we all know what it's like to wake up with a killer headache, or you get one in the middle of the day and you realize...
I've been to the ER multiple times for IVs,
you
for
know.
Fluids.
Oh
yes.
My gosh, yes, you know. And
that's with the comfort of my own house feeling like shit, and I have fluid. I just can't keep it down.
Yeah. Oh, it's a terrible, terrible feeling. Or even if you just have that awful cotton mouth feeling where you get to a point where you're like, all I can think about is drinking some water. I just need to feel that feeling of it just replenishing my life. And this is technically our body's first stage of being like, you're dehydrated, go mm-hmm. drink some water, you dumb bitch. And as we all know from the Magic School Bus, the human body is made up of 60% water. So we take a lot of water to keep things running smoothly. And in the vast majority of cases, those small warning signs from our bodies that they're designed to give us are the worst we'll ever have. So you get a headache, cotton mouth, you drink some water, you're fine. But if you've been unlucky enough to experience the next level of dehydration, maybe when you've been working out really hard and you're like, oh, I didn't hydrate the day before like I should have, or you've been drinking a little too much alcohol in the hot sun, your body can then really start to wig out. So you might become sluggish and dizzy, get muscle cramps, or even feel confused as your brain is no longer functioning at max capacity. And this is danger zone dehydration. So your body is no longer producing nearly enough sweat to keep your body cool. cool. So very similar to a car that doesn't have oil, everything under your hood is way overheating. And you need to immediately go indoors, find shade, drink water, and if possible, lay icy towels on wherever you have like a major artery. So the back of your neck, your thighs, to bring down your core body temperature. I remember when I was in college, we had a record heat wave come through during my freshman sophomore preseason workout camp. The heat index was in the 110s. So the Fahrenheit, it was like 106, 108, but the humidity made it feel far, far hotter. And by state law, because every year there are like high school and college kids who die in the South because they have all these like football pads on, you know, they're drinking caffeine, they're not hydrating, and they just collapse. Terrible. But now there's very strict laws in place. And during when I was training, if the temperature exceeded a certain degree of Fahrenheit, we were required to completely stop every 15 minutes. We had to go sit under a tent, and they had buckets of ice water with towels in them, and they would drape them around our neck and across our thighs, and they had to watch us consume a certain amount of water.
Unless my family was being held hostage and me completing that workout for a school sport was going to ensure their safety. Oh, fuck that. I'd be home in my basement playing Animal Crossing.
Caitlin, I genuinely don't know what possessed me to be like, this is great. This is fun. I drank so much water, I easily would consume 2 gallons of water in a 2-hour practice and would not pee. So that just goes to show you how much water your body will go through. And I wasn't even in a situation where water wasn't accessible to me. And it just shows you how quickly, like, there were times where I was like, oh, fuck, like, I feel dizzy. I don't feel well because your body is struggling to keep its core temperature low. So, yeah. And in case you guys were wondering, actually, do we have somebody that we can call to the stand who almost found himself in the similar situation?
Sam!
Welcome to the mic, Sam.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Really fast, we've been talking about dehydration and the effects that it can have on your body in hiking situations. Why don't you tell us about the situation that you and your brothers found yourselves in a couple years ago?
So I think it was back in 2021, we went to Colorado to do a hiking trip. And we decided that we would hit the rattlesnake arches while we were there.
We already talked about rattlesnakes.
And arches.
Neither of those are good things. Continue.
We planned ahead. We kind of knew what we were getting into. Unfortunately, it was a record high, I believe, for that trip.
Caitlin and Jen are making eye contact.
So we set out. I think we had about 4 liters of water each.
Okay, so 4 liters for those of us who had to Google it, that's like 8 glasses worth of water.
Yeah, if it's like maybe those larger restaurant glasses, or if it helps you picture it, like 2 of the large 2-liter soda bottles. And based on what we were recommended by other people who had hiked that before, that was about what we wanted.
Okay.
So we packed about 4 liters of water each on average. I packed 5, one of us packed 4, I'm not going to name names, but somebody only packed 3 liters of water.
Okay, so you packed your water, and what happened as you guys hit the trail? Because I know there were some things that went wrong that you didn't anticipate going wrong, so take me through what happened.
So the first thing was that it turned out being a record high for that day, or at least near record high.
Okay.
I don't remember the exact number, but it was fairly close to 100 degrees. So that was probably the first thing, completely out of our control, obviously.
Right.
But that was one of the big factors. And then there was another one in which traveling through the Rattlesnake Arches Trail, the path wasn't entirely clear.
Okay.
So you just kind of spend a lot of time going down a path you think is the correct path, and then you have to backtrack a little bit, so that just kind of wastes time out in the sun, in which there is no shade, and you're just all surrounded by rocks that kind of absorb and reflect the heat. So while 100 doesn't sound like a whole lot, you're trapped somewhere without shade, and you don't really have any cover from the sun.
Yeah. So did you also feel like you guys were going through your water much faster than you normally would have?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time when you go out on a hike for the day, you don't think about carrying like two whole large like soda bottles of water with you just to drink for that hike.
But you blew through those really quickly. And then what happened? Didn't somebody in your group actually have to stop?
Yeah, so we were all feeling it to some extent, some worse than others, but...
And when you say feeling it, what did you feel like was happening in your body?
So it's just kind of the typical symptoms of heat exhaustion and, you know, you feel like lightheaded, you feel that fatigue.
Did you feel like you were maybe, I was reading that confusion can happen where you feel kind of like your thoughts are scattered or maybe like you aren't thinking as sharply. And even if you know where you're supposed to be, you maybe feel turned around and like you suddenly don't recognize where you're at. Just kind of like almost hallucinating or disoriented. Did you get to that point?
Just speaking for myself, I didn't quite get to that point. But there is a little like disorientation or not thinking clearly when you start getting like that hot and it's hard to cool off. For sure.
Yeah. And did you guys actually end up having to leave someone behind because they weren't able to keep going?
At the point we were at, heading back on that hike, we had entirely run out of water. It got to the point where you think that, oh, this is actually bad. Like, we're not even close to getting back yet, and we're completely out of water. We're exhausted. We're not thinking quite clearly, getting a little dizzy.
That's scary. Did you have a general idea of how far you still had to go to get back?
I want to say at that point, we probably had like 4 miles to get back.
But that's far.
It's pretty far, but it's not even a flat 4 miles to get back. It's like parts of it were kind of climbing up to get to where you want to go. And at that point, we had collectively decided that we were going to split up. Probably not the best decision in every hiking case, but I ended up feeling the best out of all of us. So I went on ahead, and the plan was to go ahead, go back to the vehicle, get water, and come back.
And the other people that were in your group, did they actually have to physically stop? And were they sitting and waiting because they were like, we can't keep going? And I'm asking you these questions because it's very pertinent to the story that we're telling right now. But it's very fascinating to me that something so similar happened to you guys. And it just goes to show how like quickly it can happen when you think that you're prepared. So when you left to go find water, didn't you also find someone else not part of your group that was sitting that had to stop because they were dehydrated?
Yeah. So shortly before that point, we were on our way back, probably, if I had to guess, maybe 6 miles out, and we still had a tiny bit of water left. And we ran across somebody else who was literally just sitting beside the trail under like the shade of essentially a dead bush. He just had like his hand on his head and he was looking really rough. So we gave him like half of the water we had left, which wasn't much, but it was like...
And was he a solo hiker?
Yeah, he was solo by himself.
Wow.
And it ended up that we gave him a little bit of the water we had left because he was looking so rough.
Yeah.
And ended up that he called his family to come out and get him because he was doing so poorly.
Wow.
And he ended up talking to us later because we ended up meeting at the end of the trail.
Oh, good.
And he's like, that little bit of water you gave me made a huge difference. It just kind of invigorates you when you know you have something to keep you going.
Yeah. God, I mean, it very well could have even saved his life because it could have kept him from having a heat stroke or, I mean, you don't know. Wow, that's scary. But fortunate.
Yeah.
So how did it conclude for you guys? Were you able to get back to find water? And then did you have to go find the other members of your party?
Yeah. So I ended up separating from the group, hiking the rest of the way back. And by the time I had got back to where our vehicle was parked, I was kind of essentially stumbling to the Jeep we had.
Jeez.
And, you know, taking drinks of warm water because that's all we had in the car.
Oh.
Because we had a cooler, but the ice was long gone.
Yeah.
And then taking everything else extra, throwing it in the backpack, and heading down the trail. But luckily, at that same time, I was loading up water. The family of the guy we helped out had showed up.
Okay.
And so they were also super helpful, and they helped me carry some of the extra water out down the trail.
Mm. Gotcha. Oh, man. So when you happened upon your comrades who had been left behind on the trail, in what state were they in? Were they conscious? Were they unconscious? Were they crying with joy to see you?
No, I would not say crying with joy. They're more delirious than anything.
Oh, gosh.
And one of them was struggling to keep down water once we got it to him. Oh. So it's one of those points where you're so like dehydrated and sick feeling, it's hard to even keep water down.
Oh, that's very scary. So now that you have been through that, what would you say, like, if you were to take on something similar again, what would you do differently?
I mean, the only really different thing you can do is pack extra water, make sure you check the forecast right before you head out.
Mm.
Some things are a little unexpected, but it's also understanding your limits in aspect to the conditions.
Because
100 degrees doesn't sound that bad for a hike if you're, let's say, in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But 100 degrees trapped out in the sun with no shade, with rocks surrounding you, is completely different.
Right. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that. That's very, very similar, eerily so, to the story that we're telling. Are you sure you guys weren't the 1996 Boy Scouts in the Grand Canyon?
No, but I can definitely relate.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, we're very glad that you all made it back. And yeah, thanks. You can go back to whatever you were doing beforehand. Now that we had that story, that's going to segue us right back into this.
Can we just add for funsies, because it was never noted, but one of those guys that stayed back and Sam brought water to was your husband.
Yeah. Oh, well, to be fair, he stayed back.
He was the good one, though.
Yeah. He stayed back with the other friend who was not doing well. But I did not find out about this ill-fated day hike until almost a year afterward, because they knew that I would be really upset. And I was. Not because I don't. It makes me sound like crazy or overbearing, and I'm not. I was just upset knowing that they were in that level of danger, and I had no idea.
I mean, it's no different than...
Yeah, and then they're like, it was no big deal. And I'm like, yes, it was a fucking big deal.
You could have fucking died and left me with all three of our children.
So, yeah.
But thankfully, they all survived.
They did. Lesson learned, and...
And they are experienced hikers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They were older. They carried more weight.
Mm-hmm.
It was a day hike, and unfortunately, it's not a day hike for our Boy Scouts here.
No.
So, this is the reality of where the group is at now, and even though Lauren really didn't want to leave Guy behind, he did know that Jordan was right. He yelled back up to Guy that they were going to keep heading down, and they promised that they would come back as fast as they could with water. And with all of his remaining strength, Guy called down, Lauren, look after the boys.
Oh.
And it's at this point, I want to say, in the real life interviews, Guy starts becoming emotional, and he gets more emotional. But
yes, and so does Mark, because this is the point where things, I think, they were already bad, but it's where they begin to realize that their lives are very imminently in danger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not what you expect to hear. And then when you hear it, knowing that you're still a day's out from the water and you have to come back for somebody.
Yeah. You've shifted from inconvenient and uncomfortable to dire.
And yeah, that scared the boys. And it was in that moment that everything changed with their mindset, I would say.
Yeah.
And 2 hours later, Lauren suddenly recognized their surroundings and remembered when he had been in the area a year before, there had been a small creek that ran for a half a mile along the ridge that they were on. It was a full hour out of their way and would add a huge additional strain to their dehydrated bodies, But David, being the selfless person he was, grabbed an armload of their empty water bottles, and he immediately volunteered to go look for it himself. And he did eventually find it, but at the time it was nothing more than dust.
Oh my god.
It was dried up.
Oh, that had to be devastating.
So now it's 2 p.m., and they'd been hiking for 6 hours. The temperature was stuck at 112 degrees, and since their pace had slowed down considerably, they were still hours from the river. That's when, all of a sudden, 71-year-old Lauren Pace's dehydrated body collapsed from exhaustion. They were in an area with large overhanging rocks, so there was some shade, and he said he thought it would be less strain on their bodies to wait until the sun went down and then resume hiking. He was adamant that this was the best thing for them to do.
I could see the logic there, because the sun is not baking you.
Right.
But, as we'll go on to see, I also understand the opposite logic.
Yeah. But again, the boys really didn't want to wait. It was still hours until sunset, and the three best friends all had the sense of overwhelming urgency, which, I mean, was probably pure survival instinct at that point.
Yeah, like an animalistic part of your brain is just taking over, yeah. Like water, water. Yeah.
And that urge was that they had to keep moving towards water. And time spent sinning, not getting closer to water, just meant they were running out of their body clocks. And David even said later that it wasn't a decision they debated. It was a sense they simply had to do. So against the wishes of Lauren, Mark, David, and Jordan tell him that they are going to push forward. Lauren's brother Earl and the other two boys decided to stay with Lauren, and he gave the boys written directions for the rest of the hike. Now, meanwhile, back up at the canyon, Guy was well into the serious danger zone. His sweat glands were no longer functioning, and this meant any physical exertion would send his internal body temperature to a deadly 108 degrees Fahrenheit. Despite this, he felt he had to do something to make their group more visible to a passing aircraft. It was then he remembered he had a reflective emergency blanket in his pack, and with every ounce of his remaining strength, he took it out of his pack, pulled himself up onto a ledge above where he had been sitting, and then stretched the blanket out and held it down with rocks.
That was really smart.
And in his interview later, Guy, like I said, had already become emotional. He was now at this point crying, tears streaming down his face as he recounted that moment. And it was because he knew the sheer effort alone it took him to pull the thin blanket out of his pack meant that he was truly helpless.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, like that he felt like it takes every ounce of will and strength I have just to pull up, you know, those little like foil looking thin blankets, and that took everything he had. So you're fucked at that point.
So further down the chute, Lauren became anxious about Mark, Jordan, and David going ahead alone, so he sent Earl and the two other scouts after them and stayed behind. So now two people
are
left behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are off the Mark trail.
Right. With no way to contact each other or rescue services. Yay.
Gosh. So now both Lauren and Guy are left to the elements, like we just said, and it seemed like a good thing that the boys had gone ahead. They were way ahead of everyone else and moving along at a good clip, and had less than a mile to go before they hit the river.
Oh my god. They're so close. But it still is like longer, because it is winding.
Like, it's not just four laps around a track in high school. It's
like you're figure eighting within the track, around the track.
And they're going off written instructions.
Yeah.
Finally, they felt like everything might be okay. But then, to their horror, the path they thought they'd been following came to a sudden end in every direction. And all that stood before them was a sheer 200-foot cliff face.
Even in the reenactment, my jaw was like hanging open. I was not expecting that plot twist. I think I would have just thrown myself off of it.
These kids face something no kid should have to do. Oh my gosh.
These are truly like insurmountable odds.
Somehow they'd gone the wrong way and were now at a literal dead end. Even David could no longer be optimistic. In utter despair, the boys allowed themselves to lay down beneath the shade of some overhanging boulders. Their heads and their bodies were throbbing and so weak in this moment, and it was there that Jordan realized that this was the last place they would ever be alive.
Oh, they're like 15, 16, 17. I mean, they're babies. Mm-mm.
Like, they're like, oh my gosh, it's a week away from our parents, from responsibility. We get to be outside. We get to be rugged. We get to... And this is where they're at.
Yeah.
For the last couple of days, whenever Mark had felt anxious, he'd asked David if they were going to die. And David had always said, don't be silly, Mark. We're going to be fine. But now, when Mark asked if they were going to die, David said, I don't know, Mark. I think we might.
Oh, God.
Then David asked Jordan if he could get him a pen and paper out of his backpack because he wanted to write a letter to his mom and dad to say goodbye.
No, I don't like that.
Jordan told David not to be stupid, that they were going to be fine. But Jordan didn't actually believe this. He was just so weak and exhausted that he physically couldn't move his body to find a pen and paper.
Yeah, and he says this in his interview later. He's like, I wanted to say it in a way that made David feel like I was confident, but he's like, I actually was realizing that I physically didn't think I could move my body. Yeah. And he's like, I had this kind of feeling settling over me that I was dying and I just wanted to lay there and go to sleep and not move. And that is so scary.
And so, yeah, the boys at that point started to drift in and out of consciousness, and Mark actually hallucinated that he was laying in a coffin and saw his little brother looking down on him and crying. And it was that woke something up in Mark, and he realized he did not want to die in that moment.
He was like, not fucking today. Nope. So suddenly, Mark, who had never rock climbed before in his life, got up, marched to the edge of this 200-foot sheer fucking cliff face and threw his backpack over the edge. He turned to Jordan and David and said, this is what we have to do. So, according to Mark, either they were gonna die sitting under a rock, or they were gonna die trying to make it to the river. This is some medieval level grit right here. This is incredible. So one by one, with Mark in the lead, the three boys laid on their stomachs and inched their bodies over the edge of the 200-foot sheer cliff face that even the most experienced climbers would never attempt without ropes and gear. So all they have to hold on to is just little jagged pieces of rock and broken off roots just kind of like jutting out from the side of it. And even if they did make it down, there was no way they could climb back up and get to the other people in their group. But I don't even think they're thinking about that at this point. It's just like, we're gonna die under the rock,
or we're in survival mode.
Yeah, or we're gonna die on the cliff face. But somehow they go down a foot. And then another foot, and another, and another, and the ground keeps getting closer and closer. And finally, all three of them make it to the bottom. That is incredible. I fully know what happened, and I have chills just like reimagining that. Oh my God, so fucking amazing. And then there was a sound they had been longing to hear for days now, the roar of the Colorado River. They were almost there, but now there was a new problem. David had started to lose his vision. Remember, we talked about that as one of these symptoms of heat stroke. And way back up the canyon, Guy still sat struggling to breathe and willing his body to cool down when he heard the unmistakable, terrifying buzzing of a diamondback rattler just within striking distance. So in this moment, Guy realized that he was far too weak to even move out of striking range of the snake. So he just had to sit there while it stared and buzzed at him. I would just be like, Jesus, please take me. Like, just take the wheel. I said, my soul.
The kid who stole cars off holes, who puts his foot out to get bit by the rattlesnake so he can leave. I would just be like, end it now.
That would have been, take me. So for over an hour, the snake sat coiled and staring at Guy with its rattle buzzing. And finally, I guess it just decided, okay, like, don't feel like biting him today. It just slithered away. So back down at the bottom of the 200-foot cliff face, the boys could hear the water and it seemed close. So they're just going as fast as they can in the direction of the sound. And they would kind of come up to like a corner in the rocks and round it and expect to see the river. But every corner they rounded, it was just more rock and more sand, no river. It was a horrible feeling to hear the river so close and still not see it. And at this point, Mark describes that their tongues felt like they had just become rocks that were wrapped in sandpaper. They could probably barely speak because, I mean, if you think about it, your tongue is pure muscle full of water, so you don't have any water in your tongue. It's just like useless.
All I can think of is when somebody was dying mm-hmm. in the nursing home and their tongue would just be completely dry.
Yeah. It's awful. And their bodies, I mean, they're just racked with pain. They're all shaking. They're all aching. I mean, they're just migraine miserable. They're probably just stumbling towards the sound of the river. I mean, I can't even imagine. Now, David was still keeping up with the boys at this point, but he was really struggling to see. And after around an hour of walking, the boys came to an area where there was this fallen tree, and David let himself lean against it just to catch his bearings for a minute. But with no warning, he suddenly collapsed. So a terrified Jordan and Mark ran over to where David lay on the ground. And I mean, I can only imagine how frantic and helpless they must have felt as their friend convulsed and his eyes rolled back in his head. So now David was in the full throes of a heat stroke. Mark yelled at Jordan to run ahead as fast as he could until he hit the river and bring back water for David. So Jordan took off running and rounded yet another rocky corner. And finally, there was the river just 100 yards away. Jordan ran as hard as he could and threw himself into the cool water, sucking in mouthfuls while he held their empty bottles underwater to fill them. He wanted really badly to stay and just keep drinking as much water as he could. I would want to take up shop there. I'd be like, this is where I live now. But he cared far more about getting water back to David. As soon as the bottles were full, he wasted no time running back to his friends. So then Mark and Jordan desperately tried to pour the water down David's throat, but it was like he didn't even know it was happening. So the next thing they could think to do was to pour everything they had on his body, and they tried to cool him down. And once those bottles were empty, Mark, who at this point is nearly delirious himself, took off running towards the river. He plunged in and, like Jordan, held his empty bottle underwater to fill it up for David. But as he rose with the full bottle and began to turn back toward his friends, not one, but two giant yellow rafts surged around the corner on the river full of men in life vests. Back on the shore, Jordan could hear Mark screaming for help, and his heart probably fell out of his butt when around the corner came Mark and an entire rafting party full of off-duty doctors and paramedics.
Guys, life is a simulation. I don't believe it.
What in the fucking hell? So they just descend immediately on David, and they utilize every skill they had to help him. And I'm sure Mark and Jordan nearly fainted with relief. I mean, they're probably still delirious themselves at this point, but I can't even imagine. So one man pulled out a walkie-talkie and began communicating with emergency services, and Mark and Jordan sat stunned at their unbelievable stroke of luck. Just a minute, I mean a few seconds earlier or later, and the men on those rafts would have never known that three boys and their entire hiking group, like scattered all back up the canyon, were on the verge of death several hundred yards away. Now, by this point, night was quickly falling, which meant they could not get a helicopter to pick them up before dawn. I guess it's just because the visibility is so low. I'm like, don't helicopters have
lights?
Floodlights, but I don't know. I mean, they still have to be safe and do all those things, and that was the best they could manage. You guys have to get through the night. We'll pick you up first thing in the morning. So Mark and Jordan sat huddled together by a fire on the shore and watched the men work tirelessly on David. And at around 10 p.m., one of them walked over to the boys and very kindly broke the news that they had done absolutely everything they could, but their friend had passed away. Jordan said when he heard this, he felt like his heart was being torn apart. Us too.
Ugh.
I, at this point in the episode, I was crying so hard, I was like ugly wiping my snot with my sweater sleeve.
I've not seen this coming. Episode. Like, I watched this show growing up, and when I told you the Boy Scout one, I was like, this will be a great one. And then I'm watching it, like, I think a few minutes behind you. And yeah, when they said he died, I was walking on the treadmill watching it, and my jaw dropped. I was like, I do not remember that. Like, you line the story up that there's these rafts with medical personnel mm-hmm. on them.
Yeah, they were so close.
So, at first light the next morning, a rescue helicopter was able to touch down on the beach, and according to I Shouldn't Be Alive, Earl and the other two boys had not gotten lost and had actually managed to make it down to the shore a few hours later. And thanks to his smart thinking with a reflective blanket, rescue services were able to quickly locate Guy, who was unconscious, but he was thankfully alive.
Imagine waking up realizing you'd been rescued.
I would truly think I was bit by the snake and I was hallucinating.
Yeah. I mean, I know he fully accepted that he was passing away.
Yeah.
So
the episode claims that, quote, Lauren Pace was found wandering alone in a canyon, while another article said he was found alive but unconscious. Either way, thankfully he was alive and rescued.
Yeah.
So the devastation of the entire group when they learned of David Phillips' death cannot be understated. Mark and Jordan later said it changed their lives forever, which, I mean, how could it not?
Yeah.
And when someone who was their best friend and was so full of life was gone in an instant on a trip that was supposed to be just a fun adventure together. And what the episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive didn't tell us was that it had been David's own father, Robin Phillips, who had planned the trip, and he had been unable to attend at the last minute. And less than a week later, yet another entirely different group of Boy Scouts had to be airlifted by rescue officials out of the canyon under similar circumstances. And as horrible, and some might say preventable, as this tragedy was, by all accounts, the group truly believed they had followed the Boy Scout motto of be prepared. It just shows us, even when we think we have everything under control, Mother Nature is a fierce bitch.
Yeah, she
does. And she should be respected. She doesn't give a fuck. And when faced with disaster, everyone in the group showed incredible grit and resilience. But the person we really need to credit with the salvation of 8 people was none other than 17-year-old David Phillips. Because, if you remember, it was David who continuously encouraged everyone when their situation became dire, and it was David who did not hesitate to leave the group and put extra strain on his already struggling body in search of the creek. And I think, like, one of the biggest things that breaks my heart is it was David who freely gave his water.
Yeah.
And in his short life, David Phillips was a person of sincere faith, and many people claim to be, but when faced with choosing themselves or choosing to help others, they are far less willing to walk what they preach. But when a fun week with his friends turned into life or death, David chose to walk out one of the most beloved verses of his faith. Greater love hath no man than this, than he who would lay down his life for his friends.
Jordan Weiniger is now a well-respected police officer in Salt Lake City, Utah. Just a little aside of Jordan Weiniger, it was really hard to find anything like current about him, but within the last couple of years, he's survived yet another incident of some crazy person trying to literally run him over and crush him into a guardrail, and he survived by shooting the person in the hand. So I was like, what the damn hell? And yeah, by all accounts, it's the same person. So
damn.
Yeah, Jordan, keep on keeping on.
Not today, motherfucker. I had to scale a 200-foot cliff.
Yeah, and apparently he did everything you're supposed to do before you actually have to resort to shooting someone. And he waited until the person literally tried to crush him before he pulled a firearm. So
damn.
I mean,
and he got his hand. Ugh.
Yeah.
Off point, sorry.
Anyways, but Jordan Weiniger is alive and well, a very well-respected officer who sounds like he's one of the good ones. And Mark Coons lives in Arizona, and he is now a husband and father of four. And this is really cool, a dentist who specializes in the dental care of pediatric and adult patients with special needs who have anxiety around dental procedures. That,
no.
I'm going to cry again. Mark just comes across in his interview as a genuine sweet baby angel. Like, he has...
There really is something about him that it's just like...
I feel like I know him. I love him. I want to be his dental patient. Maybe that's a little too far, but Mark Coons, we love you.
Hey, I'm telling Jacob.
Sorry, Jacob.
Our family resident dentist.
Mm. So the two boys have remained very good friends, and obviously they will never forget their incredible friend David, or the men who stopped to help them on the river. Y'all, we honestly have no idea what the rest of the group are doing. I don't even know if the article or the episode gave the names of the other two boys in the group, but yeah, they survived, and we really hope they're doing great. As well as the other three men. So, and both of our hearts just so deeply go out to the family of David. And that's really all I have to say. So much love to them. And he truly seemed like an amazing person in every sense of the word. And the ripple effects of his very short life, I have no doubt, will just continue to affect so many people's lives in so many ways. Yeah, and that's all I'll say on that before I start crying again. So, yeah, that was the story of I Shouldn't Be Alive.
I'm also so upset that this is the one I recommended for the first one, not remembering that someone had passed.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember people dying in these episodes.
I mean, it makes sense.
I mean, I'm truly heartbroken for David, and truly I'm heartbroken for everyone involved, because what they went through was extremely traumatic.
Yeah.
And then losing someone on top of it. I'm beyond grateful that there were people who survived.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so this is a weird little thing that I learned. So I thought before I learned that, like, the facts of this case, I remember when I was just loosely Googling things about it that I saw an article that said the parents of Boy Scout that died of heat stroke on a hiking trip sued the Boy Scouts of America for negligence. I assumed that it was David, but no.
It's a different one.
It was completely different. It was something that happened in Florida later.
Well, knowing that his dad organized the trip,
yeah.
I mean, there's no one to sue.
Right.
And I hate that we're so Sue happy. Bitch, I think I'm the one that said in the very beginning, Sue, lawsuit.
Well, it's because we want someone to blame.
We
want someone to be held accountable. And I just don't think that this is one of those cases where anyone can be held accountable because no one did anything sinister or necessarily wrong.
No.
Maybe a little bit like poor planning, but there was no like straight negligence or stupidity. It was just like we learned from Sam, a combination of factors that you don't expect. And suddenly you find yourself in a dire situation when you just started out your morning and everything was great.
Yep.
So that's why camping is canceled, y'all.
Oh my gosh.
Stay at home.
Like we got fridges that have those water dispensers now. You got well water over there. I don't really trust that either. Oh, God. The thought of guzzling Colorado River water without a filter.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm sure at that point you don't care what kind of bacteria you're going to get. You just want to hydrate yourself.
See, I'm very much that little elephant. Turk.
Is the water sanitary?
Well, we could both say that now, but I think if we were minutes from death, we would be deep throating the entire river.
Yeah. Water.
All right, guys. Well, let us know what you think of that story. We're gonna do our best to keep bringing you ones that are really, really riveting. We're gonna just kind of choose them at random and see what speaks to us. And yeah, if you are listening to this on the main feed, make sure you leave us those 5-star reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Send your case suggestions to campingiscanceled@gmail.com. And make sure you pop over to patreon.com/campingiscanceled to see what all is happening over there and see if you want to get in on it.
I know right now we don't have a backlog of things as we're just starting to roll out Patreon, but bear with us.
Yes.
We are putting effort into having lots of extras for you guys.
That's right.
We look forward to having you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Be nice.
Even though we're not always, it's a double standard, but it's our podcast, so we can say what we want. But we love you guys very much. Thank you for all of the very kind messages and posts and tags that we get. It really means so much to us. We absolutely love doing this podcast and want to keep going with it and keep bringing you guys better stories, more stories. It gives us life and makes us really excited to get to come in here and do this.
We need it.
Yes.
Please.
All right, guys. Well, we know that was a really terrifying story, and the world can be kind of a scary place. So we're going to go snuggle in. I know I'm going straight to bed after this. But remember to always have courage and stay kind.
Of a bitch.
Bye.